from the Mercy One Studio.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Making It Personal is provided by Serra Vocations Ministry. Learn more at joinserra.org.
Making It Personal with Bishop William Johnson on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.
Welcome to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson. I'm Kelly Metcher-Collins with the Diocese of Des Moines. On today's show, we're visiting with Brandon Vaught, best-selling author of 10 books and senior content director of Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Catholic Ministries. On today's show, we're talking about his newest book, Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church. But before we get to today's interview, let's find out what's on Bishop's mind.
Well, good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
And, I'm kind of still grieving, Curtis Kurtz, Channel 8 weatherman, retired weathercaster, stepping away from his duties. You know, mm-hmm. He's 60 years old. Wait a minute, I'm just turning 61, so something wrong with this picture as well. And believe me, I'm feeling those years as I try to get ready to participate in the Biking for Babies, of mm-hmm. which I'm a board member, who mm-hmm. try to stimulate missionaries to ride and to raise consciousness and support for pregnancy resource centers. Jimmy Becker is kind of one of the local figures who really helped and has drawn me in to this as well. So on Saturday, July 17th, there are four different rides coming from the kind of four directions of the compass, converging from Green Bay, Columbus, Ohio, oh. Colorado, and Mississippi, converging on St. Louis. And so I'm going to be bold enough to ride from Springfield to St. Louis, a century ride. But let me tell you, I got to tuck a few more in under my belt. It's going to be something moving along. So the heat and everything else. So I look forward to that. Hopefully, we won't dial it up over 20 miles an hour, but to keep it going and that piece that's part of that. So looking to support that and the experience that is going on. There is a kind of a ride on August 7th to support InterVisions Clinic. It's a local ride, much more, I think, approachable for people, 25 to 30 miles, but more to come on that. But just stay tuned on this local ride, Biking for Babies.
Okay.
Conscious of the many ways in which our diocese radiates outward, Sister Joyce Bloom and Charlotte Willenborg and Tim Sullivan, who left Shelby County to head down to Agua Prieta in Mexico, across from Douglas, Arizona, to reach out and work with the Frontera de Cristo organization, a nonprofit that has many ministries for almost 40 years. And so they were there kind of at the thick of all that's going on with immigration and people who are trying to escape or to find a life. And I know that's a very volatile point as well, but they're kind of one-on-one ministry, tending to the those who are hurting in any way, offering counsel and human contact as well. So asylum seekers, families who've fled their countries, and all that are there. And so they spent a week there. They heard many heartbreaking stories, were able to kind of console people, offer the spiritual and physical works of mercy. People who've tried to cross multiple times have paid so much. And again, the surveillance system and things that are part of this. But how there's kind of an infrastructure of people providing humanitarian aid. So Sister Joyce has lived and worked. She continues to be that missionary of joy and love. We're going to hear Brandon Vaught talking about bringing joy mm-hmm. and laughter and love to others. And Sister Joyce is a radiant example of all of that. Continue to get inquiries following the Bishop's spring meeting, and particularly concerned about the Eucharistic renewal, how the sacrament of healing and hope, how we can continue to inspire and draw people in, and also realize the implications of our Eucharistic faith for the whole dimension of our life. And so I think, people are interested in where I am at that. I think I'm trying to kind of summarize, that this document on the centrality of the Eucharist, I'm beginning to sense ever more the assistance of the Holy Spirit to our bishops. This is meant to be the preeminent sacrament of unity, but we know we're not always united, let alone, brothers and sisters in Christ or others, but even within the church. It can expose for us times when our response of amen prior to receiving Jesus' body and blood is not integrally joined to our personal public witness with all that the Eucharist entails, both in terms of not simply the doctrine of transubstantiation, but the moral claims of our faith. And so it's supposed to deepen our communion, continue to call for conversion. And I was concerned that the bishops were not united in their respective statements. There were kind of different bishops kind of speaking individually. So I'm glad for this prudent process of engagement in accord with what Cardinal Ladario was counseling us and the ultimate decision to proceed to draft the document. I'm very hopeful and supportive that this will help us realize God's intentions for our church and help us as bishops fulfill our responsibilities as pastors. I know, Kelly, you helped me produce a video that's on our website. People can check that out mm-hmm. about the Eucharist, but please, all of you, I invite the faithful of our Des Moines Diocese to pray very intently that the Holy Spirit will continue to counsel not only our bishops, but to conform us all to the mind and heart of Christ, including our elected officials.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll welcome Brandon Vaught, best-selling author of 10 books and senior content director for Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Catholic Ministry.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Catholic Women Now provided in part by Permar Security, providing security solutions for homes and businesses since 1953. Permar Security is a Catholic-owned family business supplying security systems, access control systems, video surveillance, fire alarm systems, and video doorbells. All alarm systems are monitored out of their monitoring center located in the state of Iowa. Permar Security, 515-244-5660, permarsecurity.com.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Dowling Catholic Sports is provided in part by Ashworth Vision Clinic. With two licensed optometrists, Barbara Sheets, a Dowling graduate, and Dr. Craig Harper, the Ashworth Vision Clinic team provides complete eye exams, contact lenses, glasses, glaucoma testing, and pre- and post-operative care. Ashworth Vision Clinic is located at 60th and Ashworth in West Des Moines. 515-440-4610 or online, ashworthvision.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson. On today's show, we're visiting with Brandon Vaught, best-selling author of 10 books and senior content director for Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Catholic Ministries. Today, we're talking about his newest book, Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church.
Good morning, Mr. Vaught. Good to have you with us. And I really wish, for instance, like last August when I was appearing at a Legatus dinner and giving a talk and everything else, and then the Q&A session that followed, the questions were really all about what about our children, our young people? And, you know, you could see the heartache and the pain that the parents who were present. And so, you know, I think I probably gave a scattershot answer, but really your book really folds it all together. It's a marvelous compendium and so much real wisdom and data to back up all that you're about on this project of trying to draw our young people back into communion and a lived relationship with Jesus Christ. What sparked for you the desire to write this book?
Well, it's funny, Bishop. It's the same experience you had. Whenever I would go around and speak at conferences or parishes or dioceses, they'd have a Q&A session, and inevitably, regardless of the topic I was speaking about, there would be questions about my son, my daughter, my grandson, my granddaughter has drifted away from God or has stopped going to Mass, has left the church. What do I do about it? I'm desperate. I'm in despair. What do I do? And so I kept hearing that over and over from lay people. And then I started talking to priest friends of mine, and the priests would tell me the same thing. They said, oh, yes, this is the most burning issue I hear from my people in the confessional and spiritual direction. So many parents and grandparents are upset and in near despair about this problem. And so I realized there wasn't really many good comprehensive resources that dealt with it. So that's what sparked the writing of the book.
Well, and your collaboration with Bishop Barron, obviously this has been at the forefront of his work and interest as well. So that's a pretty potent combination between the two of you.
Yeah, he's, you know, a great mentor, a great hero of mine. We've been working together for many, many years. I graduated college and started working as an engineer for several years and was kind of doing evangelization stuff on the side, including some projects with then Father Barron. He was just a professor at Mundelein Seminary, but then he became a bishop. I left the world of engineering to move into the full-time world of evangelization. And yeah, we've been working together for several years now.
Oh, tremendous. We love engineers, right? I mean, they're realists. They're like farmers, right? You know, they know the world isn't all about them, right? Mm-hmm. We have to make things go in this way. You do some kind of demographic work. Sociologist Christian Smith appears some of his work and trying to kind of talk about the mindset and multiple lists. You said something early on about kind of talking about, you know, we'll speak about not practicing Catholics. There's that really maybe a former Catholic is an oxymoron in a way because of, you know, once baptized in the Catholic Church. I was once at a doctoral defense by Father Jerry Mary, appears on Fox News once in a while in New York Archdiocese. And he was defending that once baptized, one is always a member of the church. It's kind of like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can't ever leave the church in that way. But what are some of the dynamics that are kind of fueling, I think, culturally or the mindset of people and different things that might be in play for why people find themselves not practicing their faith?
That's a really good question. What I found over the years is that Catholics have all sorts of really strong opinions as to why they think people leave the church. You know, go ask any Catholic, why are young people drifting away from the church? Oh, well, let me tell you, you know, and they'll tick off one, two, three, four reasons. But the good news is we don't actually have to guess at the reasons, because we have tons and tons of data from surveys of people who have drifted from the church, asking them directly, what caused you to leave? And so we have thousands and thousands of data points on this question. The Pew Research Group has done a big study on it. CARA, probably the most prominent Catholic social science research group, has. I know there's been at least two or three dioceses that themselves have commissioned their own sort of exit surveys of Catholics that have drifted away. The answers differ from survey to survey, but in general, the most prominent reason, I think it's the number one reason in all the surveys, is some version of my spiritual needs were not being met. My spiritual needs were not being met. The second reason closely behind it is I just no longer believe. And you can interpret that how you want. Maybe it means they don't believe in God. Maybe it means they don't believe in the teachings of the church. They don't believe in the Eucharist. Whatever the case, there's an intellectual roadblock. They just don't believe the things that are being taught them or given to them. And then oftentimes you'll find, especially among Catholics that drift away and end up in a non-Catholic Christian community, usually a Protestant church, sometimes a big evangelical megachurch, they'll say things like, I never was introduced to Jesus in a personal way, or I wasn't taught the Bible in a thorough way. And so they find that in another community, and that's what's drawn them there. But I often like to quote Pope Benedict XVI, who he was once asked how many paths there are to God. And his pithy answer was, as many as there are people. And he wasn't being a religious pluralist and suggesting that, oh, all religions are equally good and true, and it doesn't matter what religion you are. No, obviously not. He's one of the great defenders of the unique salvific claims of Christ and the church. But what he was saying was every person has a unique path by which they find the Lord. And if that's true, then it's true leaving the church as well, I would say, that every person leaves the church for a whole confluence of reasons. And so while the survey data is interesting, what's more important is if you have a son or a daughter, grandson, granddaughter, you need to talk to them personally and find out, what caused them to leave? You know, they were raised in the church. They seemed to enjoy going to Mass. They believed in God. Now none of those things are true. What changed? Was it something that pushed them out of the church? Was it something from beyond that pulled them away from God or the church? What was it? So in my book, Return, I teach parents and grandparents how to ask those right questions to get at the specific reasons why the person in front of them has drifted away from the church.
And you do so very lucidly. And one of the things that captured my attention there was, you know, that the rising percentage of Catholics not practicing who are identify as atheist or agnostic, but that, you know, whether the new atheism is kind of one of those pieces there, Christopher Hitchens and people like that, but that they're actually in some ways fertile ground in a way, that they're actually maybe more likely to be wrestling with some of the ultimate questions versus what, you know, you call the shruggers, you know, the meh people, you know, who really are just, you know, blah, you know, they're not, there's no engagement whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. I would much rather have an angry atheist to dialogue with than someone who's just indifferent or ambivalent, because they care. They recognize that these questions concerning God, meaning, morality, religion, they matter, that they're the most important questions we can ask. And the answer determines how we live. And so these are questions everyone should be concerned about. So, yeah, I agree with you. Give me a staunchly resistant atheist or agnostic over someone who's just blandly indifferent.
Yeah, Brandon, in your book, you mentioned the very large group of fallen away Catholics or former Catholics who have just a really strong apathetic attitude and don't even seem to care about the questions of faith and life. Why do you think there is such an increase in apathy? Do you think it's part of just the secularism in our society, or what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, I think in general, secularism, which is this, you know, blanket term, probably could explain why so many people no longer care about religion, because the secular mentality just stands athwart religion and an enchanted worldview. But more specifically, I think the culprit is relativism. So Pope Benedict XVI famously put his finger on this in the homily he gave before being elected pope, when he identified this dictatorship of relativism, this almost militant form of relativism sweeping across culture, politics, education, just about every facet of culture. Relativism says that there is no objective truth. And that's a problem in just about every field or discipline, but especially in religion. If religion is just reduced to subjective opinion or preference, you know, you're Catholic because, you know, you like going to the Catholic church. It makes you feel good on the inside. But, you know, this guy over here, he's Methodist. His personal preference is Methodism. You have a Muslim over here, a Jew. You have, you know, a Buddhist. And you know, whatever each of them like is great for them. If you take that attitude, then it's not a far leap to complete apatheism, is a common term, you know, being apathetic or indifferent about religion, because, you know, we don't care that much about our personal opinions when it comes to things like, you know, what food I like or what my favorite television channel is. You know, the fact that I like chocolate ice cream is nice, but like, I'm not going to go around trying to convince other people that they should like chocolate ice cream, or I'm not going to become an evangelist for chocolate ice cream. That's what happens when we're talking just about subjective preferences. And so when so many people today see religion in that same way, that your religious choice is more like your preference for ice cream flavors, that I think it leads directly to indifferentism.
And I think the recently issued Director of Catechesis also talks about this, you know, with the social media as well, that all that's important is the narrative. And you've got your story, I've got my story. But how are these converging? Are they leading us to something ultimate or real, a person for us as Christians, obviously the person of Jesus Christ, and the truth of what it is to be in relationship with him in that way? And so I think, you know, what you're getting at is very much incisive and diagnostic. But there's a whole positive turn in your book, and one of the positive turns is, I think you're not giving sacramental absolution, but you want to alleviate parents of some of the false guilt for their responsibility and the fact that their children might not be, but at the same time, invite and challenge parents that they have a vital role in possibly leading back to communion with the church. So it kind of, you know, letting that lie or that mistake that people blame themselves, but at the same point, not to repeating mistakes that would ultimately just kind of solidify their apart, being apart from the church. Could you kind of talk about that? Where we get traction for beginning to engage?
Sure. I've heard parents say so many times, and I'm sure you have too, Bishop, you know, it's all my fault. What did I do wrong? I wish I would have done something differently to prevent them from leaving the church or falling away from God. Now, there's obviously some truth to that. Every parent has influence over how their children are raised. Good parenting has an impact. So does bad parenting. But influence is not the same as control. Every person has free will, including our kids, including our grandkids. So you could do everything possible to influence your child. You can take them to Mass, enroll them in Catholic schools. You can facilitate moving religious experiences, et cetera, et cetera. Yet even after all that, your child might still choose another path. And that's a concomitant of the gift of free will. We have to allow for that. But that said, oftentimes you as the parent or the relative or the grandparent are in a prime position to help influence them back to the church and to God. Because usually you're someone that your child or grandchild trusts, takes seriously, loves. They'll be more open to hearing truth out of your lips than out of a stranger's lips or someone online. And so even if you wish you would have done things differently as they were being raised, don't fall into the trap of guilt. You need to let go of that past. Don't worry about what's already happened. Start looking forward and thinking, how can I be part of the solution? How can I help reverse this momentum and draw them back to the church?
And so then there's no... magic formula, but what I like is it's so accessible and real and draws from the great treasury of the church and all that they're about, and kind of bringing to awaken again that trust and to build upon that. You speak of thresholds, you know, certainly St. John Paul II, you know, crossing the threshold of hope, the biography of him, but there are different thresholds for young people to again kind of rekindle that openness of seeking, and that hopefully would lead to discipleship. Could you just, the field's open for you, some ways in which we might spark this and prime the pump for that awakening.
Sure. I'm glad you phrased it the way you did, emphasizing that this is not a magic bullet solution. This is not a formulaic plan where if you just do steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, it's guaranteed that your child, your grandchild will come back to the church. We all know that's not how life works. But what I have in the book is what I call a game plan. And so it's got several chapters devoted to outlining how this works. But the goal is to create the best possible atmosphere in which your child will return to God in the church. So to increase the odds exponentially that will happen. So in the church, in the book, we cover several different steps or maneuvers that you want to make. The first one is to pray and fast and sacrifice for your child. Obviously, the most important one, and not just because that's the pious answer, because, yeah, of course, you should pray for your fallen away children, but I share several stories in here of parents and grandparents who have done nothing else but pray for their kids, and have seen miraculous returns. We, of course, think of the great Saint Monica, who prayed for 15 years for her wayward son, Augustine, to come back to God and to Christianity. And it was Ambrose who told Monica that the child of so many tears is bound to come back to the faith. God won't ignore the prayer drenched in all of these tears. So prayer, fasting, sacrifice, by far the most important spiritual tools in this game plan. But then from there,
maybe Mr. Bob, we'll take a little break there as we're coming up on
sure.
that, and hopefully you'll remain with us.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson on Iowa Catholic Radio and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Making It Personal is provided by the Sarah Vocations Ministry, including the St. Sarah Club of Des Moines and the Sarah Club of Council Bluffs. Sarah is an apostolate of the Worldwide Catholic Church dedicated to fostering and supporting priesthood and religious vocations. Sarahs strive to accomplish their mission through prayer, fellowship, and service to the bishop, priests, sisters, and all in religious formation, and in doing so to increase their own holiness. Learn more at joinsarah.org, joinserra.org. Thank you, Sarahs, for your support of Iowa Catholic Radio.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and the Uncommon Good provided by Mercy College of Health Sciences, where you can chart your course for more.
This is Bo Bonner.
And I'm Dr. Bud Marr from the Uncommon Good.
Mercy College provides unparalleled clinical rotations, hands-on learning, accelerated education, and flexible schedules. Since 1899, Mercy College has been transforming students into healthcare professionals. Guided by Catholic values, our faculty put classroom theory into practice. Students are prepared for roles in service and leadership throughout their own careers.
Learn more at mchs.edu.
Welcome back. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson. We are back with Brandon Vaught, author of the new book, Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church. Brandon, I was recently covering the Catholic Men's Conference, and one of the speakers talked about how really God is just asking you to plant a seed, just one little comment or being a witness in small ways is so important, and that's what you've talked about in your book, and that's what you want to communicate.
Yeah. Obviously, you can't give what you don't have. You know, I think of that great line from Pope Paul VI in his encyclical Evangelii Nuntiandi, where he says, modern man listens more willingly to witnesses rather than teachers. And if he does listen to teachers, it's because they're witnesses first. And that's got to be true in this case with fallen away loved ones, is what they'll find most compelling is if we love our faith in such a resplendently joyous way, that they're just going to want what we have. Whatever it is that's breathing fire and joy and meaning into our lives, that's the most compelling argument for Christianity. So I think that obviously is probably the most effective way to draw someone back to the church, is the radiant witness of a life in love with Christ.
Amen. And I think you know, you trace a path, and again, great patience, which is really long suffering for us to be able to embrace that, and knowing that you know, this is ultimately maybe something that we don't always get to see all the results too. And so obviously the work of parents and grandparents when they do go to Christ, but in this realm, on this side of the veil, that, you know, that communicating this unconditional love. You cite that Hemingway story, you know, The Capital of the World, about the man who puts the newspaper ad to his son, you know, that all is forgiven, and then, you know, to meet at the rendezvous at this time, and there's over 800 young men who are just simply looking for their fathers, you know. And I just think that, you know, here we are in the weeks following Father's Day, that we're looking for that. And so, that, you know, obviously Luke 15, the prodigal son, but that unconditional embrace by our fathers and our mothers, and then how that opens us up. But it's also a call for conversion. We have to, as people who are practicing our faith, who love our faith, to continue to go deeper. I'll put the plug in for our Catechetical Institute, which will begin a new season here come this August and September. You mentioned the catechisms away, the Bible, our prayer lives and things that are there. But then, you know, being able to answer the question, why are you Catholic? You know, I think sometimes our young people hear what, you know, the older generation, you know, finds at fault in the church, and we need to be honest and critical. But why do you love the church? Why do you hang in there? And to be able to answer that question, why are you Catholic? And so I think, you know, that's one of the marvelous things that can help us here. You mentioned other questions and prompts. Without orchestrating these encounters, are there ways in which we have to be bold, to be willing to go there with our young people, even though we might have to absorb a lot of negativity or static?
Yes, absolutely. You know, chances are if your child or grandchild has left the church, they're harboring a lot of frustration, disappointment, even anger at the church. And oftentimes you just have to let them vent and absorb a lot of that. You know, chances are they don't have anybody in their life whom they can share these problems and difficulties with. So maybe you need to be that person. Say, hey, lay it on me. You know, tell me why you don't like the church anymore, and absorb it all. Don't try to answer them immediately. Don't try to offer defenses or objections. Just take it in. And oftentimes that act of listening itself is communicating something, that I care about what you think. I care about your religious sentiments. And then you can go from there into a more substantial dialogue.
I liked your citation of the proportion of that 55 minutes of listening and 5 minutes of speaking, you know, is a good way to get going and establish that foundation of trust that might move forward. But that when one does begin to see opening, you know, we're looking for seeds where we can affirm, remaining calm along the way, and we're in our last 30 seconds, but to form those connections with a good priest, to maybe open that opportunity for the sacrament of mercy, and then any other sacraments. But that's down the road. But I think any parish priest delights in being available and asked to assist somebody who's welcome back. You know, we talk about the big fish returning. And so I really appreciate the book. I commend it to everyone. Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church. We could speak much more, but thank you, Mr. Vaught, for taking time with us this morning.
My delight. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Brandon. This has been another edition of Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson. Thank you to our guests and all of our listeners in Iowa, Nebraska, Wisconsin, wherever you may be listening, on Iowa Catholic Radio and Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
You can hear Making It Personal with Bishop William Johnson every week on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Making It Personal is provided by Serra Vocations Ministry. Learn more at joinserra.org.